What's up, everyone? I don't usually record inserts like this, but I wanted to today because Garland Favorito of Voter GA is doing great work exposing truth and protecting election integrity. And I wanted to encourage everyone to share this show, clips from this show. It doesn't even have to be the show. Just it could be Garland's X account. It could be videos that he puts out, the Voter GA account on Rumble or YouTube. VoterGA.org is his website. Just share his work because he's doing actual great work to protect elections and expose potential fraud and fraud where it happens. And his work needs to get more attention, and the mainstream media is certainly not going to give it the attention it deserves because it goes against their agenda. So share Garland's work far and wide. And now the show. We are live on Rumble, YouTube, Rockfin, Twitter. This is the Propaganda Report. Garland goes to Washington. Garland Favorito, that is. I am Brad Binkley. Garland Favorito of Voter GA has been an election integrity expert, a watchdog, since long before Donald Trump ever went down the escalator back in 2015. In fact, when I first met Garland in 2017, I think it was, he was investigating the Karen Handel, John Ossoff special election. I think it was for the Senate or the House in Georgia. I can't remember which. But at the time, Garland believed that John Ossoff might have actually won an election that Karen Handel had won. So his efforts are not driven by partisanship or loyalty to Trump, because as I said, he's been doing this long before Trump. His efforts are driven by the pursuit of protecting the integrity of our elections in this country, which is the only thing that makes us a democratic republic. Without election integrity, we are nothing but a sham, really. And a lot of people are starting to feel that our elections are going that way. So having somebody like Garland out there doing the great work that he's doing, which doesn't get as much attention as it should, in my opinion, is what is giving us and protecting our freedoms in this country. So I am honored to welcome onto the show today Garland Favorito of Voter GA. Garland, thank you for joining me today. How you doing?
Well, I'm honored to be on the show, Binkley. I was on your show before I was cool. Well, yeah,
I got to tell you, man, I watched your Twitter following X Now just blow up over the years, because once the 2020 election happened and you continued doing the same work you've always been doing, nothing changed. Doing the same work you've always been doing, started getting a lot more attention. And I have to say, you started getting smeared a lot. One of my favorite things to do is I used to go do searches for you before you came on the show, and I would find quotes that the New York Times would say that you said, or Wall Street Journal, and then I would ask you if you said any of those quotes, and you'd be like, no, I said none of those things. And it's just amazing the coordinated propaganda effort that will be pointed towards someone who is just pursuing an inconvenient truth, which I think right now you are, at least to some extent, pursuing an inconvenient truth that they would like to silence. And earlier this week, I think it was yesterday, that you were testifying at Jeffrey Clark's D.C. disbarment hearing. And Clark, and correct me if I'm wrong, he was worked in Trump's Department of Justice, and he is a co-defendant in the Fulton County trial. I think that is, and he's on trial in D.C. for being disbarred right now. They're having a hearing. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. And he was the acting assistant attorney general in the Trump administration, or one of them. And I, you know, I'd never met him before. I didn't really know anything about him until I got up there. You know, but you're right. Just to mention a couple of the lead-in points, the New York Times never got anything I said right, and that was intentional.
Never. So yeah,
they were the worst of all.
And they always, before they say your name, this is called poisoning the well to their readers. It's an old propaganda technique, as old as time, that I think everybody's familiar with now. But they would call you a MAGA election denier, or whatever slur that they would use to go ahead and make up their readers' minds before they said anything about you.
Well, yeah. What's really interesting about that, since we had plenty of time, I got interviewed by them. They asked me the best questions I've ever been asked. We had a long interview, probably 45 minutes. And then the guy who wrote the article, his name was Nick, completely ignored everything that we talked about and came up with his own agenda, his own story, which apparently he had in mind all along.
He probably wrote it before the interview.
I wouldn't doubt it, because I didn't help him. There was almost nothing that I said that was consistent with what he put in.
That's funny, because I know how they do this. So he had a story that he wanted to write, and he had quotes he wanted to get out of you, and he had questions directed at you to try and get those quotes out of you, but you were smart enough not to fall into his trap, and so he just ignored everything that you said.
Right. Yeah, really. Literally. And the New York Times was the worst of all. I mean,
and they're also bad. And they seem the most reputable to people right now. And they do this media literacy training, which they're putting into the public school system. It's already in the public school system right now, where they emphasize to children, trust these few sources. Don't worry about the content. Just trust these sources and distrust these other sources, which is the opposite of logic and reason, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And of course, they do that, and they don't want anybody commenting on their articles either. So point out the fact that they're wrong.
Not at all. So there's a 3-minute clip going around. It's on YouTube and Rumble, about 3.5-minute clip. I watched this and it blew my mind. The admission that one of the lawyers for, what was this committee called? It was called
It's called the Office of Disciplinary Counsel. Okay. I believe it's a division of the D.C. State Bar, or D.C. Bar.
And you were at Washington. You were in D.C.
I was in downtown Washington, right near Judiciary Square.
Interesting. I bet that was quite an experience.
Yeah, it was very interesting. I felt like I needed to be there in person. Your testimony is much more effective than it is on Zoom, I think. So
definitely.
I wanted to be there to really provide the evidence of fraud, errors, and irregularities in the 2020 election that the Justice Department refused to investigate.
They ignore it. It blows my mind. I hear people talking about it, and I scream at the top of my lungs. Garland is actually doing real work about this. Voter GA, they're doing real work. They've had real findings. Like, it just the fact that it does not get attention is such an injustice.
I think so too. But we got a little bit of justice here yesterday with this clip. The attorney, just to kind of set the clip up. The attorney is a gentleman named Hamilton Fox. He's representing the Office of Disciplinary Counsel. So he is the opposing attorney against Jeffrey Clark. And Jeffrey Clark was being represented by Harry McDougal.
Wait a minute. Huh? Hamilton Fox versus Harry McDougal?
Yes.
These are interesting names, is all I'm saying.
It's kind of funny. So Harry's a great lawyer. He's Atlanta based.
Yeah.
So he did the direct examination of me, and we were able to put some evidence on the record. But then, Mr. Fox opened it up for some more evidence. So we kind of walked through that door. And we're able to get some more evidence in. And then a kind of a startling admission at the end of this video, which has now been coined the greatest cross-examination failure of all time.
I saw that, and I agree. They're so used to people not having information to back up claims, but you always have information. But you're so thorough in the work that you do. And they got hit with a buzzsaw asking you these questions here. Let me ask you this before we play it. What was your role? Why were you asked to be there specifically?
Well, I testified as an expert witness for Jeffrey Clark. Okay. So that was my role.
Yeah, so they wanted to show that he wasn't just making stuff up, right?
Exactly. And the Justice Department really should have taken his advice and and investigated that instead of attacking him for pointing it out.
Fantastic. Let's play the clip and then we'll talk about it a little bit.
List for us the ones which you believe are evidence of actual fraud having been committed.
Well, you're referring to electronic?
Anything.
Well, I'll give you an example. As a result of our concerns expressed in the December and November, we conducted, we did a full statewide request for ballot images from all of the counties. We found out that the original ballot images in over about 70 counties had been destroyed, and in spite of the fact that they were required to be retained for 2 years by federal and state law. We went in and we analyzed in Fulton County again, I hate to keep going back to them, but we found out that the Fulton County ballot images were electronically altered before the certification of the results in 2020. That is evidence of actual fraud that occurred, which has still not really been properly investigated to this day.
Okay, that's one. What else?
I had to pause it right there. He's so frustrated by that. He's so frustrated by that. You asked for something, you gave it to him. He's like, oh, okay, that's one.
I'm really not sure why he's asking me this in the first place. I'm kind of baffled because, the first thing is you don't ever ask under cross-examine a question you don't know what the defendant is going to answer or the witness.
Yep. So, go ahead, sorry.
Go ahead.
In regards, we've since found that there were at least 1,000 double copy ballots in Chatham County. And we have found, 8,000 double scan ballots statewide, approximately. Now, is not necessarily fraud. That could be errors, or it could be a mixture of fraud and errors. We have no way of knowing until all that's investigated.
These are things that you've found.
Our organization has
can you cite us some examples of evidence of fraud that is in the public record? Not something that you have investigated and uncovered, but any other evidence of fraud?
Well, the evidence of the counterfeit ballots that we talked about earlier. Again, these were mail-in ballots that weren't folded from being mailed.
Oh, sorry, Garland. It cut out. Hold on 1 second. Let me pull it out. I'll put it back in and refresh this. The CIA is getting a hold of us once again. Let's put it back in. There we go.
They were not on the correct paper stock. They were not marked with a writing instrument. They were marked with toner, according to senior poll managers who've got sworn affidavits in court cases right now. They testified that they were marked the same way down ballot for dozens in a row. That's clear evidence of fraud in the 2020 election that was known before January 3rd. In fact, it was known before December 3rd.
There were 100 of those ballots, correct?
No one knows how many ballots were because we've spent 3 years in court trying to get those ballots public record. We actually appealed that case to the Georgia Supreme Court. We won the case in the Georgia Supreme Court. They declared that we had had standing all along, and the Superior Court judge had made a complete error. That case went back down. He then passed it off to another judge who we believed was too impartial. We filed a motion to recuse. So after 3 years, we had still not got to see the ballots that there were 6 sworn affidavits for that were counterfeit. That is not the appropriate way to investigate. And the Secretary of State's office filed an amicus brief against us to try to prevent us from looking at the ballots. What kind of a Secretary of State would have done that?
Corcoran, I guess.
That's your opinion, not mine.
And I think you're right there. It wasn't like he was saying what you would say. That felt like a natural, almost reflexive answer to with the evidence you presented, and a great question that you turned around back on him that he probably is kicking himself for answering. I mean, that was unbelievable to me. That was not somebody on your side there. That was somebody trying to disbar Jeffrey Clark, who you were there to present evidence to show that he should not be disbarred.
Yeah, and he was trying to discredit me and impeach me at the same time. But I think you made a key point there when you said it was a reflexive response on his part. It was, I think he suddenly thought we were out in the hall having a conversation.
That's what it seemed like.
And not in a courtroom where he is, you know, attempting to impeach me.
And it's like you're having beers together. You're talking about how corrupt Brad Raffensperger is. And maybe he's doubtful. And then you present all this evidence. Well, a corrupt one. I mean, Brad Raffensperger is super, super corrupt. Anybody in Georgia who has followed your work knows that. And that admission right there should be played over and over again on the mainstream media if they care at all about truth, but they don't. And his demeanor when you were answering questions, he was looking down, he wasn't paying attention. It's like you were the fly in the ointment. You know, you were Bruce Willis in Die Hard there. You're the monkey in the wrench, the fly in the ointment. And he did not anticipate you, which is just baffling. I guess it shouldn't be baffling to me because they're so arrogant. I went to law school. You didn't go to law school, but you display so many more legal skills than just about anybody you come up against. It's unbelievable. It's very impressive. But I learned in law school, like right away, like law school 101, is that when you present a brief, you have to argue against your case harder than the other side is going to argue against it before you go in to make sure you have a strong argument. Because if you don't anticipate, if you don't know those answers before you ask the questions, like you mentioned earlier, then you're toast. And this guy, this is lazy work by this guy. He didn't know the buzzsaw of Garland Favorito that he was coming up against.
Well, I think it probably wasn't a very fair matchup. He's, you know, because he doesn't have that technical background. But I can tell you that Jeffrey Clark is getting much better treatment here in Washington D.C. than what John Eastman got with his the judge out there who's incredibly biased and makes no bones about it out in California. Here there's a 3-judge panel. And it's pretty clear that one of them is already going to rule against Jeffrey Clark. But the other two, I think, are going to give him a fair shake. And I think he's going to end up all right in the long run.
I hope he is, because it is, as I said, injustice that we are right now witnessing. It's not easy to see, as easy to see for everybody when you're in it, in the middle of it. You take a bird's eye view, or 100 years from now, we will look back at this time, hopefully, if the correct people write history, and we will see that this is not a system of justice. It's a system of injustice that is ruling over this country right now, which brings me to my next question related to this. Isn't the entire Fulton County RICO case against Trump and his co-defendants, including Jeffrey Clark, isn't it dependent on ignoring this and other real evidence that you and Voter GA have produced?
Totally dependent, Brad, because all of that evidence was withheld from the grand jury, either by Fannie Willis or Nathan Wade. And the whole case hinges upon the fact that they misled the grand jury into believing that there was no fraud, errors, or irregularities in the 2020 election, and which to me is they clearly withheld exculpatory information that would have exonerated all of the defendants in the case, or at least most of them. And now they're using millions of dollars of taxpayer money that Fannie Willis claimed she was going to use to keep the county safe, and by reducing the unindicted murder case backlog, all that was what she told the commission, turned out to be false. As soon as she got her extra $5 million a year, she turned around and requested this election investigation where she could indict 18 of her political adversaries.
Yep. Fulton County right now is like Gotham City without a Batman. Mm-hmm. And Fannie Willis, as I like to call her, is as corrupt as I get. I've done multiple shows. In fact, I think you were one of the first people on a show we did maybe a month and a half, 2 months ago, where I said, watch out for that judge. There's zero chance he gets rid of her. And I was right. And going deeper into her background and the connections with her father and everybody she's hired in the DA's office, there was zero chance of that. And even though it looks like they're going to extend this case with the appeals and everything, and this judge is giving the appearance of being fair, which is just the appearance of being fair, People have to remember he did not win that seat. He was appointed to it by Brian Kemp. Brian Kemp, who you highlighted for us, is not on Trump's side of this case. He's very biased against Trump because he did not let you and other members of Voter GA into a fish fry. I think it was back in August, because you guys had voter integrity shirts on. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, that's right. There were several different types of shirts there. We didn't, and he just didn't want to, it turned out, long story short, was that he didn't want to have his picture taken with anybody wearing an election integrity shirt, even in the background. How bizarre is that?
Very, very bizarre. And I'm not going to even point out that his attitude changed around December of 2021. People can look up the date of what happened back then. I'm not going to go into the conspiracies around that. I know that you know what I'm talking about. I shouldn't be cryptic. His daughter's boyfriend died in a car accident. I did not even dive into those conspiracies at first. I'm not saying there's a conspiracy there. All I'm saying is before that, he was all about, yes, let's investigate these real issues that you have brought up, that some are still in court, which just blows my mind that this indictment, which depends on everybody just agreeing that there was zero irregularities, let's call them, zero. I mean, the whole indictment depends on that. I was watching the hearing the other day where they were debating the nuances of, well, did Trump believe this? Did he not believe that there was possible fraud? And I'm going, we don't know that there wasn't fraud. There's still cases in the system. It blows my mind that they race past those premises. And Brian Kemp was all about investigating those until that date. He was against it afterwards, and he's become CNN's favorite governor since Stacey Abrams, ever since that time.
Yeah, and of course, it was probably a little bit more than an accident. Those flames from that car went 100 feet in the air. You can see it on the video. It's quite
it's crazy.
And then the GBI investigator who was investigating the accident turned up dead in his residence there.
I didn't know that.
James O'Sullivan. That was another piece to the puzzle that makes it even more suspicious.
Where do you think this case in Fulton County is going to go?
Well, I believe that the Court of Appeals is going to have to remove Fannie Willis. And then that could be the, I think that's going to cause a lot of the case to fall apart. So that would be my guess. You can't, with all the evidence, and I think we did a show on this, and if not, we will, but with all the evidence that she should be disqualified, it's just remarkable. And I think, did we talk about that a few weeks ago?
We did. We talked a little bit about it. But okay. Say what you're going to say. I don't know how deep we went into it because it was kind of at the beginning of the disqualification hearings when we last spoke.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to do a whole show on that one because we've got about a 20-slide deck on that.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'd love to see it.
That she was disqualified, that she disqualified. It looks like we'll have some time to cover that as well on a future show whenever you're ready.
Yeah, definitely. But what I would encourage everybody to do, and your people and everybody as well, is go to the Black Agenda Report, which is a Democrat progressive-leaning Black-run website that has written many great articles about Fannie Willis. And the reason I direct people towards this website is because this is what gives me hope that the divide and rule strategy that we're all up against in this country right now, that's what they want, everybody fighting with each other. But this is the type of thing that gives me hope that people can see who the people are trying to divide us and recognize it and come together with those they disagree with who aren't those people. Like, they've written many articles about Fannie Willis's behavior during the Atlanta Public School. Remember that about 10 years ago, I think 2015, the Atlanta Public School cheating scandal, Fannie Willis was the top prosecutor on that case. And she still will not back off on accusations. And like, she's ruined the lives of a number of Black women who, one of them, I can't remember her name off the top of my head. She wrote a book about it. She's done many podcasts. She gave plea deals to the obviously guilty people, which this is something that's common in law, which is unfortunate. But she said, look, we know you're guilty. We're going to give you a plea deal. You can walk free on this condition of many conditions, but one of the conditions being that you have to point to someone else who you say did it. And so some of the people that were pointed to were one in particular was an elementary school teacher, and which is interesting because part of the whole scheme was there was federal money that was given to the states if they raised their scores, their test scores in the schools. So there was incentive. And the teachers who raised the test scores of their students, they got financially rewarded, except for elementary school teachers. So someone who was pointed to as guilty literally had zero incentive to cheat because it would not have helped her financially at all. And zero evidence has actually been presented. She was just pointed to as being guilty by someone who there was a lot of evidence of guilt of, who got to walk free. Meanwhile, this elementary school teacher, her life has been ruined for 10 years. She's been financially drained. She's had her teacher's license revoked, and she is still fighting Fannie Willis, who's still wants to put her in prison. Meanwhile, the other two prosecutors who were on that case have stepped back and said that what they did was not right. And this Black Agenda Report writes very good articles about how Fannie Willis is basically, they call her kind of a corrupt actor of the white elitist, is kind of how they describe her. And they conclude one of their articles by saying that, and I'm summing it up, I'm not speaking for them, I'm just kind of summing up what I recall about the article, that, yeah, we don't like Donald Trump, but we need to assume that any RICO case that Fannie Willis, which she's weaponized in the state of Georgia, any RICO case that she is pursuing, we have to assume that she's doing it for nefarious intent, and we need to give the benefit of doubt to whoever she's going after. And I agree with that, and I think anybody who has ever been convicted of a crime, whether it's the gang scandal going on right now or the Atlanta Public School or anybody else, if I were their lawyer, I would be calling for my case to be reexamined because of how corrupt she has proven to be.
That's absolutely interesting. I mean, basically everything that she does is politically motivated. And it's obvious you don't have to be a rocket science or you don't have to be a constitutional lawyer to figure that out. It's really bad. She has a ton of conflict of interest.
Totally. I'm not going to say she's having sex with everybody in her office. I'm just going to pretend like I think she might be. I'm not saying anything, Fannie. Do not come after me because I think that you are the Black female Harvey Weinstein. That is just my opinion. This is no statements of fact that I'm presenting here. I could do like she does and just say I don't recall anything. Did you watch her trials? Not to go off on a tangent here, but did you watch her hearings?
Every minute of them.
I mean, were those not mind-blowing, the audacity and the way? I mean, anybody who acted like that in court, I remember when I was in law school that if you did anything even remotely out of line with the rules, I mean, you get slapped back by the judge. But this judge, who used to work for her, he used to report to her in the DA's office, she cucked him out during the entire trial. It was unbelievable.
And then of course she decided that she wanted to testify when
yeah,
Anna Cross was trying to make a motion to quash her testimony, and she just completely ignores her own attorney. And I think that is going to bite her more than anything. She had a chance not to get on the stand, yep. And when she got on the stand, she really seriously discredited her,
totally.
Herself, and I think she set herself up for perjury charges. If there is, you know, that can be legitimately prosecuted.
Yeah.
She's pretty clear that she and Nathan Wade are lying, I think.
I agree with you completely. What I worry is that she appears to believe she's so above the law that she can't be touched, that in the current situation, she could be right. And while on the surface, you're correct in that this should be thrown out, if they do disqualify her at the appeals court, they have to throw out the entire district attorney's office, which will kill the case until after the election. And I believe, now I don't know how they'll make it happen, but I believe that the Fulton County case is the one that they want. They need to focus their energy. They have all four cases to split people's focus and attention, but if they really want to make a spectacle of things, and everything's about public relations and propaganda, it's not about actual law and justice. The one they're going to go for, in my opinion, is Fulton County, because you already have the protagonist and the antagonist set up. Depending on which side you're on, you have Fannie Willis and you have Donald Trump. Fannie Willis, in my opinion, if we're playing this out like it were a Netflix show, and they like to do that now, Fannie Willis is going to assign herself to take Nathan Wade's position. So she's going to be the one who is questioning Donald Trump. And the federal case with Jack Smith, it cannot be televised because they cannot legally televise federal cases. State cases, they can. It's up to the judge. Now, this judge leans in favor of Fannie Willis for the previous reasons we spoke about. So this is the one that can be televised. They can have the villain, the hero aspect of it, and this is going to get the maximum O.J. Simpson-like exposure. And Fannie's already talked about how they're continuing to press forward, and the judge put an exemption in his ruling that even though it's going to be appealed, we're still going to move forward to try to make this happen speedily. And I think that they might get this case to trial before the election, just for the spectacle of it. I hope I'm wrong, but we will see. It would be interesting for sure.
Interesting. Well, there are quite a few issues that are either will be appealed either during, before, or after the trial. There's still an amazing number of rulings, well, that are not amazing when you understand the background of the judge, but issues such as the fact that she has no jurisdiction to investigate federal elections, or even state elections for that matter, is an issue that will have to be resolved at the appeal court.
Yeah, and hopefully the justice will prevail there, because you're absolutely right. And with the work that you've done, the indictment is a joke. It's a complete joke. As we mentioned earlier, it's premised on ignoring everything that you've done, which is in evidence. It's just so wild to me. But we live in wild times right now. I have a guest that wants to make a comment to you, Garland. It's a surprise guest they've been watching your work and they want to say something to you. But before we get to that guest, tell us about the ruling in Georgia that just came down when it comes to voting.
Are you talking about from the legislative side or the judicial?
Well, what was it? I'm not up to date on what's going on. I just saw you had a press release about the Georgia voting laws.
Yeah, well, we got some good bills and some good legislation out of the General Assembly this time. Quite a few things. I'll just try to hit the highlights. They unsealed the ballots, something we've been trying to get for 2 or 3 years. Ballots will now be subject to open records requests, the actual ballots. That was a huge win for us that we've been trying to get for 3 years, so we can verify election results and detect counterfeits. They added watermarks to the ballot paper, visible watermarks, so that will allow elections officials to detect counterfeit ballots.
That's great.
They've never been able to do that before. Huge wins there. They've improved the chain of custody procedures, sign off and sealing, although that will not be effective until January 1, 2025.
So chain of custody is when you pass the ballots off from one person or one group to another so that they always have an eye on them so they can't be tampered with, correct?
Exactly. They have to be sealed, and you have to have one person sign off, the other person sign to accept them. So there were significant improvements there that would help prevent ballots from being injected. Ironically, the Secretary of State pushed back on implementing that before the 2024 election, even though they have no dog in the hunt. Because the chain of custody is performed by the counties, and no counties testified against the bill this session because it had been vetted over the last 2 years and all of their objections had been addressed.
Yeah.
So that was another win. Then the other interesting thing is that they banned the QR code on the voting system. Now, that doesn't take effect for a couple of years until 2026.
Now, what's the problem with the QR code again for listeners?
Well, the votes are in the QR code. So you as a voter, Brad, can't verify your own ballot because you don't know what's in the QR code. Even if you had a QR code reader, you still couldn't read it because it's a proprietary code structure.
So when you print the ballot, it says who you voted for, but that vote does not, that's not what is counted. It's what's on the QR code, which you can't actually read that's counted.
Exactly. It's totally unverifiable. The voter never should have been purchased.
It should have been proven to be hackable in court multiple times. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, it's been proven to be hackable. Dr. Haldeman has demonstrated hackability in a couple of different ways, not necessarily related to the QR code per se, but indirectly, yes. And his paper explains how the QR code is extremely vulnerable for instructions can be placed in it and the incorrect votes can be placed in it. So very easily.
The Haldeman report, I know we mentioned this last time you were on the show, but it's interesting. He has shown that the machines can be hacked in court twice. And then the response from the court was, well, that's in theory, but if he were to actually do that in practice, they would arrest him and charge him with conspiracy to commit election fraud.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
It's crazy.
So one of the things that's interesting about this, Brad, is it doesn't really do us any good for this election. But what it does is it sends a statement to every state in the country that you know, this kind of QR code, unverifiable voting is unacceptable, at least from the perspective of the entire Georgia General Assembly. So that's the big win out of it. Also, you don't want to we couldn't get that implemented sooner. And if we had, they would have just patched this current system. And that's really not what we want. We want something that's, that has been designed more securely than what this one has been done. Haldeman has already said that, you know, you can't retrofit security into this system. That's in his report. So hopefully in 2 years, we'll be able to get something new that we can trust a little bit more.
That's a great win. I mean, the work that you do, your persistence, it's inspiring.
Great. Yeah, thanks, Brad. And then the one or two last things, we've gotten more meaningful access for poll watchers. They can now, they don't have to be stuck in a corner anymore. They can be working with the elections officials side by side, which is, that's the way, you know, we have more meaningful access. That was another good win. And then also, if you're an election worker, you will now have to be a U.S. citizen. Okay. You have to be a U.S. citizen to vote and cast a ballot, then you should be a U.S. citizen to handle those ballots.
Fantastic.
So those are all great wins we had out of this session. So we're really grateful to the legislators. We worked really hard with them, and they worked really hard, too, to get this stuff passed because there was a lot of pushback from the Secretary of State's office as well as the governor's office on some of these issues. But I think that what we've gotten will pass. You know, governor will sign it or at least not veto it. And, you know, we'll have to come back and get a few more things next year. There's some things that we didn't get that we wanted. But we'll hopefully maybe another cycle. We'll be pretty close to having some, terrific election code.
I can't wait to see the look on Governor Kemp's face when he signed something begrudgingly that was brought by the very people that he had made change their shirts inside out and boycotted from the fish fry. So, Garland, before we have our other guest who wants to speak with you come on and read a couple of comments, where can people find you and how can they help you? And are there any events upcoming that you would like to tell people about?
It is VoterGA.org. You know, all the information of what we have talked about is as out there. And of course, as you know, we are a nonpartisan nonprofit. All donations are tax deductible. And most importantly, we are volunteers. So I don't take a salary. My wife doesn't take a salary. She's donated a lot of money to the organization as well. So we're just out to save Georgia for the 2020 election, and now we have kind of taken on this thing of helping to stop lawfare. So, yeah. So far, I think we're on the right track. We're doing pretty good on that.
You guys are doing a great job, and help Voter GA, help Garland out. This is the real deal. They do amazing work, and look into their past work and read it and understand it, because they pretend it doesn't exist with these cases that are moving forward, because Voter GA, Garland's work invalidates the entire Fulton County indictment, at least, and most likely the federal indictment as well. Couple quick comments. Irie B says this wacky bastard is one of the best out. Surprise, the show isn't bigger. I think I'm the wacky bastard. Maybe you're the wacky bastard, Garland. Maybe we're both wacky bastards. Either way, I appreciate it, and I appreciate the tip. And also, Greg, thank you. Good show, guys, says Greg. Thank you for the tip as well. Forest Mommy says the neocons are the worst of all, aren't they? And yeah, they are the worst of all. Now, Garland, I have a special guest. Now, he doesn't like when I call him fake, but fake Trump is joining us today. He'd like to comment. Mr. President. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Brad, don't think that I didn't hear you call me fake or foe. That's not my name. That's not my name.
Mr. You know, President?
Just like that song, Don't Call Me Sheila.
Yeah, no, you're so up to date on the latest culture. It's impressive, Mr. President.
Yeah, I'm pretty good with pop culture. You know, you got to be the leader in the free world.
Well, you have Garland here. He's been fighting for election integrity. And I don't know if you saw the clip we played earlier, but...
Oh, I've seen that clip. I've seen it multiple times now. I got to say, Garland, I appreciate what a fine American you are. And I appreciate the work you've been doing to make this country great. You know, and the fact that you're completely non-biased. You know, you're not on my side. You're not on their side. You're on America's side, which is exactly what we need. And I love the state of Georgia. You know, it's a wonderful, wonderful state. You know, maybe not this time of year with all the pollen, but it does have work.
Well, we appreciate you, sir, for standing up for election integrity. You're standing for the truth, so we have to stand up for it as well.
Well, amen. I love hearing that. You know, God bless you and your entire family. You know, you're doing the Lord's work out there.
Well, thank you, sir. And I really like that new hairdo you've got there.
Oh, you know, I got to quaff it every now and then. It's got to be good and quaff.
It's a good quaff. Yes. You should send Garland a pair of your new basketball shoes, Mr. President.
Oh, yeah. They're 24 karat gold.
Okay. Well, thank you, guys. Garland, do you have any more comments, Mr. President, before we get out of here?
I just want to thank Garland again for being such an amazing individual. Thank you so much for all of your hard work. Thank you for your patriotism.
Well, thank you, sir. And we are looking forward to see what happens in November. We are going to try to do everything to make sure that you get a much cleaner election in 2024 than you got in 2020.
Well, let me ask you one question. What's your favorite fast food restaurant?
My favorite fast food restaurant. Wow. That is a tough one. Let me think about that for a second. I kind of like Long John Silver's, and I kind of like KFC and Chick-fil-A. They're always right up there. There's probably a couple more I could think of, if I had a minute. You caught me by surprise there.
You know, well, maybe one of these days we can hit up a Long John Silver's together and get a shrimp basket.
Sounds good. I like that cod. That cod's hard to find. That's good.
That's good stuff. So check out the cod at Long John Silver's, and y'all support Garland and Favorito. Thank you, Mr. President, for being here as well. Check out Action Show Studios Atlanta. Is there a site on Kick you would like to point people towards, Mr. President?
Yeah, Action Show Studios on Kick.com. We got a 24-hour stream, a lot of professional wrestling going on there, just like what's going on in Washington right now. It's just a big professional wrestling match.
That's right. And it's fun to watch, too. I get kicked out of their chats frequently when I join them. So check it out. And we will talk to you guys next time. VoterGA.org, Kick.com, Action Show Studios. You guys have a fantastic rest of your day. Thank you guys for watching.